Welcome. This week we're going to talk about meeting each other's needs. I think all of us got married. For some of us, that was a long time ago. For some of you, more recently. But I think when we got married, we were so in love with this other person that our thought was, I want to spend the rest of my life meeting their needs, doing whatever I can to meet their needs. And then we get married. The problem is nobody taught us how to do that. And I think we just assume that somehow intuitively, because of our love for them, we would know what their needs are and how to meet them. And then we get married, and often things begin to go along in the marriage, and our focus begins to shift away from my desire to meet their needs to somehow feeling like they're not meeting my needs, and the distance that creates in a relationship and the conflict that creates. Today, we're not going to talk in this teaching as much about my own needs, but really trying to shift back to that focus of what does it take to meet the other person's needs? How can I be intentional about meeting my spouse's needs? And we're going to look at some great research and work that was done by a therapist named Willard Harley, who wrote a book several years ago called His Needs, Her Needs. And Harley, as a counselor and researcher, did some extensive research into thousands of couples and began to look at the needs that they bring into marriage, the emotional needs that couples bring into marriage. And you can see on the top of your handout the list here, and there's no hierarchy there. It's just they're in alphabetical order. But as you look at these 10 needs that Harley studied, he said, we bring these emotional needs into our marriage. See if you can pick out maybe the top five for you of what needs you think you brought into your relationship and into your marriage. And in the book, then, Harley looks at the uniqueness of the needs that we bring into marriage and then the consequences of when those needs aren't being met, all right? And Harley starts by saying that marital conflict is created one of two ways. Either couples fail to make each other happy, or couples make each other unhappy. I mean, it sounds kind of simplistic. They either fail to make each other happy or they make each other unhappy. In the first, couples are frustrated because their needs aren't being met. In the second, they're deliberately hurting each other. What we talked about last week when we talked about communication and the four horsemen, the idea of criticism and contempt, and the saying things that are deliberately intended, whether conscious or not, to hurt the other person. And today we're not going to talk about the latter. We're going to talk about the first. When couples fail to make each other unhappy, the failure to meet the other person's most important emotional needs in the relationship and in the marriage. All right. And so as we look at individual needs in marriage, we start with this premise. Each person's combination of unique emotional, or each person's combination of basic emotional needs is unique. No two of us are the same in this room or anywhere else. But we can begin to draw some general lines along gender boundaries. What Harley found is that there are some uniquenesses to our gender, to the needs that women bring into marriage versus the needs that men bring into marriage. And, I assume you've noticed that God has made men and women very, very differently, okay? Absolutely equally, but very different. If you remember in the second week, we talked about how God had created us uniquely and yet equally, that God has created us to be co-heirs of his creation, that God has called us to rule his creation together as man and woman, not to rule one over the other. And so as you look at that chart on the front page of your handout, you notice that there's two columns on the right after you've kind of indicated what you think are your five. And what I would do is put a label over the top of each column, one for men and one for women. Because what we're going to do is look at these emotional needs based on the gender and what men bring into marriage differently than what women bring in. Look at what Ephesians 5 says. For this reason, a man will leave his father and mother and be united to his wife, and the two will become one flesh. This is a profound mystery, however. Each one of you must also love his wife as he loves himself, and the wife must respect her husband. The husband must love his wife, and the wife must respect her husband. So even in this, God recognizes the different needs that men and women bring into marriage, and the Bible gives different instructions to the men, to the husband, than he does to the wife, to the woman. And then over in 1 Peter, instructions specifically to husbands, but I think in this case it applies both to husbands and wives. It says, now you husbands, in the same way, live with your wives in an understanding way. I love that phrase. Live with her in an understanding way, as with someone weaker, since she is a woman, and show her honor as a fellow heir of the grace of life so that your prayers will not be hindered. Now, this is one of those verses that is often misinterpreted in the Bible. One translation says, you know, live with her as the weaker vessel. And sometimes people assume that that means that there's this kind of hierarchy, that men are somehow superior to women as the weaker vessel. That's not what it's talking about here. What it's referring to is the fact that for the most part, in most situations, and understandably there's exceptions to that, in most marriages, the man is physically larger and stronger than the woman. And what Peter is saying here is encouraging husbands to say, yes, you're in the most, you know, for the most part, you're probably physically bigger and stronger than your wife. So what? You know, that doesn't buy you any greater privilege. It doesn't put you in a greater position of authority or power simply because you're physically stronger. And so he's encouraging men to live with our wives in an understanding way, and that she's a fellow heir, that you guys are co-equals in God's creation. But I love that expression, live with her. Why would the Bible instruct us to live with our wives in an understanding way if understanding didn't just come naturally? And so the Bible there is recognizing that we don't just kind of intuitively understand the uniqueness of what it means to be a woman, or from the other perspective, the uniqueness of what it means to be a man. And so it encourages us to work hard at seeking to understand our spouse and what's different about them than us. And so we begin to love them according to those differences as we begin to understand them. And then Genesis 1:27, familiar verse that says, so God created man in his own image. In the image of God, he created them. Male and female, he created them. We talked about this in week two, that God has created us very, very differently. And our emotional needs are different. And then we bring those differences into our marriage and into our relationships. And so what's really amazing in the study is, in Harley's study, what he found is that the top five needs for men, he looked at the top five needs for men and the top five needs for women, and what he found is the top five needs for men aren't even on the women's list, and the top five needs for women aren't even on the man's list. And I read that and thought, okay, that would have been really helpful information in the first 10 years of our marriage. But a number of years ago, Karen and I read this book together, and it has been a game changer for us. It has helped us orient into how we love each other because we're very, very different. And I think there was a frustration level in the early part of our marriage over the differences. And now that we have learned to understand and appreciate the differences, it gives us the ability and the foundation to love each other based on how God has created them, not on my assumption of how I think I should love them. And see, the mistake that most of us make is that we tend to love our spouse based on our needs, you know, not theirs. And that, if you remember back when we talked about love languages, without being very intentional about looking at and appreciating and understanding the differences, we tend to assume that the other person is wired like us and has the same needs that we do, okay? And what we need to do, as the Bible says, to live in an understanding way with our spouse, is to be intentional about learning what their needs are. And as a man married to a woman and a woman married to a man, their needs are very, very different because of the different ways that God has created us. Now, what Harley's contention is that there is a danger of not meeting the other person's these five top five emotional needs, and the danger is affairs of unmet needs. In fact, his book, His Needs, Her Needs, is subtitled Building an Affair-Proof Marriage. And what Harley discovered was that if any of these top five needs are not met in the marriage, they are such strong needs for us at a soul level that we will look to seek to have those needs met somewhere, and often outside the marriage. And that becomes very, very dangerous. In fact, if you think about it, almost all affairs do not begin as a sexual relationship. They begin as a platonic relationship, a friendship, other, you know, factors. But where one of these emotional needs that is not being met in the marriage well suddenly gets met in a different relationship, it sets into motion a bunch of emotions and feelings that often can lead to an affair, okay? That does not mean that an affair is the fault of the other spouse for not meeting your needs. They're responsible for what God has called them to as well. And those of you who are divorced, if you've been through a divorce, You could probably trace back, as we talk about this today, probably trace back some of the downfall of the marriage to one or more of these top five needs not being met in the marriage. And so what Harley says is that regardless of convictions or morals or religious beliefs, if you are in a marriage where one person is significantly lacking in getting even one of these emotional needs met, your marriage is in danger. And you need to pay attention to this and do something about that. Do you remember back when you got married on your wedding day, you got all dressed up and stood in front of a bunch of family and friends, and at one point you said that forsaking all others, I will be faithful only to you as long as we both shall live. That idea of forsaking all others. Now, sometimes we think that that means that I won't have, it's all about sex. I promise that I'm going to be faithful to you and not have sex with anybody else. And that's a part of it, but it's so much broader. In that promise, forsaking all others, what we're doing is we're pledging to the other person the exclusive right to meet our most important and intimate needs. It doesn't mean that our spouse will meet all of our needs. They can't. We're all broken and fallen. Only God can fully meet our needs. But there are a few basic needs that should be reserved for marriage. And that's what we're talking about today. And the reason for that is because these emotional needs create very intense emotional bonding between the husband and the wife. So we give the other person in our wedding vows, we give the other person the exclusive right to meet these needs in our life. And so as we talk about the top five needs for men and women, we're going to talk through the top five men's needs, the top five women's needs. And in Harley's book, each one is a chapter and even says, okay, when I'm talking about the women's needs, I'm only speaking to the men, okay? So this is not about, you know, listening for your needs and, you know, elbowing your spouse and saying, I hope you're paying attention to this. This is really about me as a man seeking to understand Karen's needs, my wife's needs, and how I can better meet those, and then vice versa, all right? So I'm going to start in the first one by talking to the men, and we're going to look at a woman's the number one emotional need for a woman, and that is affection. Affection. Now, for men, affection is often synonymous with sex. Like, I'll show her some affection. Okay. For women, guys, affection is not synonymous with sex. For a woman, affection symbolizes security and protection and comfort and approval. And when we show affection, appropriate affection to our wives, we're communicating to them, you know, I'll take care of you and I'll protect you and I love you and I'm concerned about the problems that you face and I'm so proud of you. And so the question is, how do you show, what does that mean? What does it mean to show affection to your wife in non-sexual ways? Well, it can mean a variety of things. It means hugs. It could be greeting cards, leaving notes. One of the things that I often do is leave post-it notes on my wife's mirror so she gets up in the morning after I've left the house and sees those. It could be flowers, not just for a special occasion, but bringing your wife flowers just as a way of saying, I just was thinking about you today. And that's, I mean, then you're way up on the affection chart when you do something like that that isn't necessarily just feeling like an obligation because of a special occasion. It could be an invitation to dinner. Hey, let's just, you know, want to spend some time together, go out. It could be, you know, opening the door for her. And, you know, with the day, these days with, you know, clickers in our cars, we've kind of lost the art of opening a car door for a woman or helping a woman with her chair. Just those kinds of things that symbolize affection and say, I'm looking out for you and I care about you. It could be going for a walk after dinner and just holding hands. A back rub, but not a back rub that has, you know, the intention of leading to something else, into sex. Could be a phone call in the middle of the day. Guys, this is a discipline we need to learn because we don't naturally do this as guys. We don't, you know, call somebody just because we were thinking about them. But to call our wife and just say, hey, I was just wanted to see what you're doing, how you're doing. I was just thinking about you. To a woman, the fact that you were thinking about her in the midst of the other stuff that you were doing speaks affection to her, okay? Now, here's the key. Every woman is different in this area. And so to live with your wife in an understanding way, guys, is to figure out what speaks affection to her. And the rule is this. Ask her. Ask her, because she knows. and say, you know, honey, what kinds of things could I do that express affection for you, that you hear as affection? And I know, ladies, that, you know, there's this temptation to go, well, if I have to tell him, it doesn't mean as much. Well, he should, you know, like, he should just know. If he loves me, he would know. Well, we don't, okay, because God hasn't wired us that way. And so the Bible tells us to learn and to live with you in an understanding way. We need your help. And so tell us the kinds of things. One of the things that my wife said to me years ago, because I would, you know, every time I went to one of the finer grocery stores in town, I would, you know, buy flowers and bring them home and say, I just wanted you to know how much I love you. And one time she stopped me and she said, I hesitate to say this because I don't want to discourage you, because I really appreciate that you, you know, would think of me and bring me things like flowers. But she said, you just need to know, you know, flowers aren't a big deal for me. And you know, when you bring me flowers, I'll be really honest, one of the first things I think about is, I wonder how much he spent on those. And so I appreciate that you're trying to show me affection, but here are some ways that you could do that other than flowers. And so, ladies, help us out with that. Let us know what works, what's affection for you, and what's not, all right? So a woman's number one need is affection. A man's number one need, anybody want to take a wild guess on this one? Sexual fulfillment. I mean, nothing else is even close, okay? Now, ladies, hear me. This is not a flaw of men. This isn't like, you know, all men are just animals. They're just beasts. See, this just kind of proves it. No, this is the way that God has made us, the way that God has wired us, okay? And sometimes, you know, women feel, why can't he just, you know, want to be with me and hold me? Why does it always have to be sex? And the reason is because God didn't make us to be like you. You know, we're not women. And in some sense, when you're asking us to just want to be with you and hold you and not be thinking about sex, you're asking us to be like a woman. And God hasn't made us that way, all right? Sex is how God has wired us. And God has wired men and women very, very differently. Women, God has wired women to need to feel emotionally connected with their spouse, their husband, in order to be sexually attracted to them, to have sexual desire for them. There first must be an emotional connection, and you ladies know what that feels like. Now, men are wired exactly the opposite. Men need to feel sexually connected with their wives in order to feel emotionally close to them. And, you know, well, this is one of those, when I get to heaven, this is one of the first questions I'm going to ask God. Like, okay, what's up with this? Because this was problematic, and it probably is for a number of you as well. And as I think about that, I think that is as challenging as this can be sometimes, because women need to feel emotionally connected to want to have sex. Men need to have sex in order to feel emotionally connected. And while that can become a lot of friction in a marriage, I think God put it in place for a reason. And here's the reason. I think God desires for us in the oneness that we talked about before, that God desires for us in marriage to be both emotionally and sexually connected in significant ways, to be both emotionally and sexually bonded with each other. And to do that, God starts with the premise of two people entering into marriage whose desire is to meet the other person's need. And so God allows us to kind of own one end or the other. And so I think God made me to need sex in order to feel emotionally connected, and my wife the opposite, because I enter into marriage wanting to meet her most important emotional needs. And so when I recognize that she needs to feel emotionally connected in order to want to have sex with me, well, I want this for her. And so I want to ask myself the question, what can I do for my wife that helps her feel emotionally connected? Because I long for that for her. And at the same time, a wife would think, well, I recognize that I'm not wired this way, but my husband needs to have sex with me in order to feel emotionally connected. Well, I want that for him. Because I love him, and I want to meet his needs, and I want him to feel emotionally connected with me. And so we would be so other-centered in our marriage that men would be focusing on the emotional need, women would be focusing on the sexual need, and the circle would just, we would grow closer and closer and closer, and we would be both emotionally connected and sexually connected. The oneness that God wants for us in both of those connections. In fact, sometimes I think if God had made us both the same, you know, there's that sense of, if God had made us the same, this would be so much simpler. But the reality is, if God had made us both like women, we would be we would spend a lot of time being emotionally connected, but we probably wouldn't have sex nearly as often as God wants us to, and the kind of mysterious, miraculous spiritual connection that comes through the oneness of sexuality that God wants us to experience in marriage. If God had made us both like men, we would probably do it like rabbits, but we might not feel as emotionally connected and focus on that side of it. So I think in God's desire for us to feel both emotionally and sexually connected, he gave us, he made us opposite, hoping that our other-centeredness and our love for the other person would allow that to work as God created it. And so as a man, I need sex to feel emotionally connected to my wife. Shanti Feldhahn, a teacher, author, wrote a book called For Women Only, What You Need to Know About the Inner Lives of Men. And in that, she said, women often think of sex as primarily a physical need for men. And she cautions women, she says, sex is not primarily a physical need for men. Sex is a need that every man has to feel that his wife desires him. And so a woman, you know, who has sex with her husband out of a marital duty, I've heard people say, well, I'm doing it out of my duty to him. That means that is not helpful for a man. No man wants his wife to have sex with him simply out of a duty for him. A man longs to know that his wife desires him. My greatest need sexually is to have a sense that my wife desires me sexually, all right? Feldhahn says, sex with his wife gives a man a sense of well-being in every other area of his life. This is an astute observation, and I think it's absolutely true. And guys, you can back me up on this. When a man has sex, when a wife has sex with her husband, that creates in him a sense of well-being, not just in the sexual area and not just even in the marriage, but a sense of well-being in every other area of his life. Sex has this broad ability to help us emotionally in the other areas of our life. Conversely, if a man doesn't have sex, if a wife doesn't have sex with her husband, then that can leave him with a lack of well-being in the other areas of his life. And so this is way more than just a physical need for men. Now, men, this does not mean that we can demand sex anytime, anywhere. Because remember that God has called us as husbands to serve and to be attentive to our wives and to be sensitive to them and the fact that they may not be in a place where they're able to have sex or just to be loving and to kind of work through that together, and again, in an other-centered, loving kind of way, all right? So sexual fulfillment, the number one need for men. For women, the number two need is conversation. I mean, see if this has happened for you before. Woman comes in, says to her husband, we never talk anymore. How come we never talk anymore? Can't we just sit and have a cup of coffee and just talk for a while? Because we just never do that anymore. And he says, well, sure. And so he sits down and grabs a cup of coffee and looks at her and says, so, what do you want to talk about? Exactly. And she gets up and says, oh, forget it, you don't understand, and walks out. And the guy's left going, what? What just happened? See, when we say, let's talk, it's because we have something we want to talk about. And here's one of the primary differences between men and women, and that is that men bond through shared experience, women bond through conversation. Men bond through a shared experience, women bond through conversation. That's why I can go play golf with my friends for 4 hours on an afternoon, have an absolutely great time with them, come home and say, oh, it was awesome. She says, how was golf? Oh, it was great. I love being with those guys. It was a beautiful day. It was just a blast. And her first question is what, ladies? Yeah, what'd you talk about? And I kind of go, golf? And then I get the list of questions. You know, it's like, well, did you talk about, did you find out from Bob how his wife's feeling? And, did Stan they ever sell their house? Or are they going to move? Or what are they going to do? And, what about Bill? And how's the job change? And I'm like, I'm sorry. I'm really sorry. Next time I play, you give me a list of questions. And on the first tee, I'll get all the questions answered. And then we'll be good. Because see, for men, just sharing an experience and playing golf for 4 hours, that's a bonding experience for men with their friends, okay? For women, that's just kind of inconceivable because women don't bond through that shared experience. They may have fun, but it's the conversation that matters. And and that's why women will call each other for no other reason than to just say, just haven't talked to you in a while, okay? If my friend Craig called me and, I said, hey, Craig, what's going on? No, not much. And I said, so what's up? Why'd you call? Oh, I just hadn't talked to you in a while. That might be just a little weird because guys we just don't do that, okay? It's also, conversation is also how a woman bonds with her husband. It's true with her friendships, but it's also with her husband. If you think back to dating and some of the long conversations that you had, I remember when Karen and I were dating, we would go out late at night for, coffee and dessert if we hadn't gotten to talk to each other all day. Then we would just sit and talk for hours and hours and get to know each other better. And looking back on that now, I realize that's how a woman bonds with you when you're dating. And she assumed that at some level, marriage would be like that. That kind of conversation would continue. And so often in marriage, we move into the kind of communication that is really just communication about data, about schedules and tasks and who's picking the kids up and what are we doing here and those kinds of things and the calendar. Not that kind of communication, but what's really needed for a woman in this area is one-on-one focused conversation. I like to think of it as not just what you're doing, not just talking about what you're doing, but talking about how you're doing and how you're doing really. And because that is a need for my wife, but I don't necessarily feel that, and so if we've gone for a long time without having some, in-depth conversation, I don't know that I necessarily feel the loss of that or the absence of that, but I need to recognize that my wife does and that that's a very strong emotional need for her. And so I need to do what I can to try and create those opportunities to lead in that area that allows this emotional need of conversation to be met for my wife. The kind of conversation that we actually talked about last week when we talked about active listening and being fully present with somebody face-to-face in a conversation. And for Karen and I, one of the things that we discovered early on in our marriage was that one of the things that was really conducive to those kind of conversations was long car rides. And we were living about 3 hours away from our families, and so we often, were back and forth and driving kind of long drives. And those were great times, just rich times of being in the car together and just being able to talk. And then as kids came, one of the things that we began to do regularly in our marriage was we had a regular date night. So I think it was every Thursday night when our kids were little, was date night. And we had a standing thing with a babysitter, and we would go out to eat, and it was great. And one of the things that we discovered, and even in reading Harley's book and the need for conversation, was that we had kind of, even in that, had gotten away from that kind of how are you doing conversation. We were in the process of raising kids, and we were also in the process of remodeling a house. And so we realized that most of our conversation when we went out to eat on date night was about the kids or about the house. And when kind of reading Harley's book, it dawned on us, we need to go back to the discipline of just having conversation that's not about planning and data. And so for a while on our date night, we actually made a rule that says we're not going to talk, we can talk about anything, but we're not going to talk about the kids in the house. And so we began doing that, and I'll tell you, we had some real quiet dinners because we had lost the art of conversation and realized that we needed to kind of bring that back in. And one of the things that I'll ask you guys is, when was the last time you learned something new about your wife? My son was home from college recently, and we were talking about college years and our college years and things like that. And I heard Karen telling him something about, something that her college years or a class she was taking. And it kind of struck me, and I went, I'd never heard that before. And so later that night we were talking, and I said, tell me more about that, because I never knew that about you when you were in college. And so we've been married for, 35 years, and we're still learning new things. And that happens through conversation. And so, guys, the question is, when was the last time you learned something new about your wife? And if you go, it has been a long time since I learned something new, it probably is because of the absence of just conversation in your lives. And so pay attention to that. For men, the number two need for men is recreational companionship, okay? If you thought men were shallow because sex was the number one need, now this kind of confirms it because recreation is the number two need. But Harley says spending recreational time with his wife is second only to sex for the typical husband. And I would say amen to that. One of the things that has endeared me to Karen is when we play together, when we do recreational things together. We love skiing, both water skiing and snow skiing. And I think about the times that we've been able to go to Colorado and ski. And I don't think there's anything that I love doing more than skiing with my wife. And we have a blast. Now, we ski very, very differently. She's a beautiful, kind of graceful skier coming down the mountain. She's beautiful to watch ski. I like to ski fast. Just kind of cruising, get the skis going and let them run. And so when I ski with Karen, I'm really not able to do much of that. And so she's always apologizing because I'll ski down a little ways and then wait for her, and then she'll catch up, and then we'll ski a little bit more, and I'll wait for some more. And she says, she's constantly going, "I'm so sorry that I know that this is not how you like to ski, and I'm sorry that I'm holding you back." And I have to keep saying, "No, I love skiing with you. I would rather ski this way and be with you than just ski by myself and ski fast." And so sometimes what we do is we'll ski hard in the morning and then we'll come in at lunchtime, and then sometimes that's enough for her. And I'll go back out in the afternoon and I'll ski by myself. And then I just like go top to bottom and just go fast and flat out. And I love to ski that way. But more than that, I love skiing with her. And it just endears me to her. I feel close to her, emotionally close to her, after we've gotten done skiing together. And so for a man, ladies, it means so much for you to take up an interest in the things that he enjoys doing recreationally. Doesn't necessarily mean you need to go do all those things. You know, if your husband likes hunting, doesn't mean you need to put fox urine on your boots and, war paint on your face and go sit in a tree stand at oh dark 30. But to take up an interest in the things that he's interested in, and to ask him about it and how his trip was. And, you just need to know on the flip side of that, if you're at a party and you're talking to people and he's talking about the, 12-point buck he bagged last week, and you're standing behind him kind of rolling your eyes because you never really liked the fact that he's out, killing Bambi's dad kind of a deal. You just need to know that cuts him to the core because he doesn't feel supported by you in his recreational activities, all right? And so it's not just about doing the things that the man likes to do. It's actually about the two of you finding things to do together that you enjoy. When Karen and I first read this book years ago, she was teaching aerobics and she was into long-distance biking. I was coaching wrestling. I really had no interest in aerobics. And, and so we weren't doing things. And we realized that if this need was going to be met for men and in our marriage, we were going to have to find some things to do recreationally. Now, we knew we loved to ski together, but we couldn't do that very often. And so we actually took up golf together. We took golf lessons thinking, this sounds like something that might be fun, and it's something that we can do together, and we can do it together, late into life. And so we did some very intentional things in our marriage to bring some recreational companionship intentionally into our marriage. I have some friends here that were telling me about this recently. We were talking about this, and she said one of the things that she and her husband do, he loves to fish. They've got a canoe that he likes to go out to the state park and fish. She's not much for fishing. She would much prefer to just sit and read. That's her idea of, relaxing recreation. She said, so what we do is we take the canoe out to the state park, and he fishes, and I sit in the front of the canoe, and I read a book. And she's not fishing, but this meets that emotional need for him. Because he's recreating, he loves fishing, and his wife is right there with him. She's participating with him, even if she doesn't have a rod in her hand. And I thought, that's brilliant. Because you're paying attention to this and being intentional about this in a way that both of you actually really enjoy. And so for a man to get this need met, guys, it also could mean actually giving up something that you really enjoy to find something that you can share with your wife. You know, maybe you've been playing softball, you know, 3 times a week for the last 20 years, and your idea of doing that with her is her sitting in the stands and cheering for you, but that's really not much together, and she's kind of getting tired of that and doesn't go every time. And so it's not just about adapting to her, you know, her adapting to your interests, but finding something to do. So maybe, you know, maybe you cut back on softball, but you take up bowling together or playing cards. You find things to do recreationally that that you're doing and that you can kind of mutually agree to say, we're going to be intentional. We're going to do this because this is important to our marriage, in addition to it just sounding fun, all right? So that's the men's number two need is recreational companionship. A woman's number three need, then, is honesty and openness. Again, there is this deep-rooted need in the soul of a woman for safety and security. And she needs her husband to be honest, not to dance around the truth or to avoid, you know, dance around the truth to avoid conflict or trouble or spinning things to say, well, this is what really happened. To not just talk, not just give facts, but to talk about the truth, to be open and honest about everything that happens. I remember one time was doing something and broke one of the plates as I was taking it out of the dishwasher, I think. And I just kind of, you know, kind of sneakily threw it away and in a way that went right to the garbage can so Karen would never know. And then one time she asked, she said, it seems like we're missing one of our plates. Have you, you know? And I went, well, I felt kind of convicted. I said, yeah, it kind of broke one time when I was taking it out of the dishwasher. And, you know, and she said, well, why didn't you tell me? And I think I said something, you know, really astute, like, well, you didn't ask, you know, and so I just was kind of hiding the fact, and what she needs is she needs for me to be truthful about what's happening, not just, you know, making sure that I get all the facts right, okay, and that also includes this honesty and openness, also includes bringing my wife in on parts of my life that may seem kind of hidden, so you know, at work, my wife loves that I work here at the church, and she's thrilled, she has a pretty good idea of most of what I do during the day. But if you think about it, from the time I leave in the morning to the time I get home in the evening, that part of my life is kind of hidden from her. And so there'll be times that she'll call and I'll answer the phone and she'll say, you know, I say, what's up? And, oh, you know, what are you working on? And sometimes I kind of fry a gasket a little bit, just kind of going, do I need to explain to you all the stuff I'm working on? That's less about her being concerned about what I'm working on as it is a question to say, I just want to be included. Tell me and bring me in on your life, on that part of your life that may be a little hidden from me, all right? And so one of the things that we even do around here is we kind of have a policy that says, you know, obviously during meetings we turn our cell phones off or to vibrate or stun or some other setting, and we don't take calls or try and do things on our phone unless our spouse calls. And if our spouse calls, then we give each other permission to take that call if they need to step out of the meeting and to do that. Now, Karen and I have a system, and so if I'm in a leadership team meeting here at church and she calls, I usually will send it right to voicemail, thinking she may have not realized that I was in a leadership team meeting. If she needs to speak with me, then she calls right back. And so if the phone rings a second time, now I know that she really needs to speak to me, and so I excuse myself and I step out of the room. And there's been times that's happened, and there's the second call, and I go, oh, okay, she really needs to talk to me. And so I go outside, and I answer the call, and she says, what are you doing? I said, well, I'm in a leadership team meeting. She goes, oh, I'm so sorry. I totally forgot about that. I didn't mean to bother you. And I said, no, that's fine. She goes, just can you call me when you're done? So it actually wasn't urgent. She kind of thought something messed up the first time she called. And so even in those moments, though, I can tell you she appreciates the fact that I'm accessible. And that's one of the great things about cell phones these days is it has increased our accessibility with each other. And this is huge, especially for our wives, because this is the number three need for women is honesty and openness, this idea that everything is out in the open and everything is truthful and there's accessibility. And so even when I talk through the schedule of my day of kind of here's what I've got coming up the next couple of days, she appreciates that just because she feels brought in on that, all right? Men's number three need then is an attractive spouse. And before you start throwing things, lady, let me explain this. God has created us as men very visual, and we are visually attracted to our spouse as well. Now, this doesn't mean he longs for you to look like somebody else. He hasn't seen a model or something. He goes, oh, I wish my wife looked like that. He wants her to look like God made her to look. And in some sense, to resemble the woman that he married, okay? And I will tell you this. He didn't fall in love with you because you're beautiful. But he thinks you're beautiful because he fell in love with you. I've done a number of weddings, and it's always kind of cute to me how the groom on the day of the wedding is just so enamored by the beauty of his bride, you know. And I've never once, said to a groom, wow, she looks beautiful today, and had a groom say, well, she's not very attractive, but she's got a great personality. Because in that moment, he's just captivated by her physical beauty. And that's because of the love that he has for you. So again, it's not some standard of beauty that he's wanting you to, acquiesce to. It's he wants you to resemble the person that he fell in love with when he married you. Again, men are visually oriented, and God made us that way. That's not a flaw of men, and it's not a trophy thing. My wife is beautiful, and I love her beauty. I love the attractiveness of her. But not to show you off. It's not so I can bring her and say, isn't she beautiful? And hope that you think she's beautiful too. Now, you would if you saw her, because she is beautiful. But I enjoy the attractiveness of my wife. Her beauty meets a need, an emotional need deep inside of me, regardless of what you think about her at all. It makes me feel special. And it's not about her looking a certain way. But it's about her looking the way that God designed her to look. And that's true both in public and in private. Now, there's days that when her, she's not been feeling well or something, I'll come home and she's in, maybe still in sweatpants or pajamas or something really, really casual. And that's fine with me. It's kind of sexy, but we won't go there. But there are days that I'll come home and she will have showered and kind of done her hair a little bit, put a little bit of makeup on, and is dressed and looking really good. And my first thought is, are we going somewhere? Do we have plans tonight that I didn't know about? And she'll say, no, I just wanted to get cleaned up, and look presentable before you got home. And I realized she did that for me. And that makes me feel special. And so, I don't expect her to look the way she did when she was 24 and we got married. But I long for her to at least resemble that person and to take care of herself and to pay attention to how she looks. Again, not trying to be somebody else, but recognizing that I find her very physically attractive and that meets an emotional need for me. I don't mind the changes that come normally through aging. That's fine. But men, an attractive spouse, the visual aspect of our spouse is actually an important emotional need for men. For women, then, the number four need is financial support. And see, this just kind of proves that women are just materialistic. No, that's not what we mean here, okay? When we talk about financial support, it does not mean rich. It does not mean that women have an emotional need to be rich, okay? Again, this goes back to a woman's need for safety and security. And so financial support is a part of how we experience safety and security in our culture and in the world, all right? And so what I've discovered is, especially in this day and age when a lot of women are working, in fact, I know women, and it was our situation when we were first married, that Karen was making more than I was. There's a lot of women that are in careers, and I believe that God calls women and equips women into careers the same that he does for men. So this is not at all a statement of, this is God's idea that women would be home and barefoot and pregnant in the kitchen. This is in home situations a lot of times where both men and women are working, and sometimes where the woman is making more than a man. And yet this need for financial support from her husband, what I've discovered in conversations that I've had with a number of women, and again, even some of these where women are making more than their husband, I had a woman say, she was talking about whether she was going to continue her career or not, and she and her husband were both very, very successful professional people, and she said, I've always wanted to do this. She's a physician. She said, I've always wanted to be a physician. This is everything I want in my life. And so I love what I'm doing. And so there isn't a desire for me to, I don't feel like I wish I didn't have to do this because I love doing this. And then she said this, which was really astute. She said, I just need to know that if I wasn't doing this, that we would be okay. For me, the security and safety comes in knowing that if we needed to live on my husband's income, we would be able to. And I thought that was really interesting, because what that did for her is that created the safety and security in this need for her, financial support, and in some sense it gave her the freedom to do what she does because it's what God has called her to do, not in some sense. I hear the agony of some women that say, I wish I didn't have to work. I wish I could stay home with the kids, but I have to work. And usually that's a financial consideration. And I understand the complexity of that in a single parent situation, but even in two parent homes, when the financial decisions have kind of led to the necessity of both people working, it's a direct attack on this emotional need for women. And so, when Karen and I were early married, one of the things we were in, I was in full-time youth ministry. She was a chemist working in a hospital lab. And people would ask us, when you have kids, are you going to still work, Karen? Are you going to take, and we didn't know what the answer to that was. We were praying about it. We wanted to discern what, she was a gifted chemist and loved doing that. But we wanted to do what God wanted us to do, but we didn't know what that was. And so we began, because she was making more than I was, we thought if we were, if we had kids, it would be a challenge for us to have her not work, because to go and live off of what I was making. But we didn't want, because it's what we saw in some other of our friends, we didn't want the financial decisions that we had made to that point dictate whether she worked or not. We really wanted to seek God and say, does God want her to be a full-time mom or to continue working? And so this was a difficult decision, but we made a conscious decision early on in our marriage to stop kind of budgeting based on both of our salaries and to live budget according to just what I was making, as if I was the only one making the money. And then we were able to take the money that Karen was making and put it into some investments and to save it for the future and some big purchases that we needed to make down the road. And to do that, we literally had to sell our house and buy a cheaper house. We had to, buy more inexpensive cars. We made some serious lifestyle changes. And so our lifestyle took a hit, and things were really, really tight for a while. But even in the midst of that, and even in the midst of challenge of having, less money to work with, this need was met for Karen. Because she was able to feel and discover, and we were able to do that together to realize that we would be okay based on what I was making. And so it's not about it's not about amount of money. It's about the discipline to live a lifestyle where she can be assured that we would be okay whether I work or not. And then that frees her up to work if that's what God has called her to do. Okay, so that's a woman's number four. The men's number four need, emotional need for men is domestic support. And so I want to read to you just a quick excerpt from Harley's book where he says, men often fantasize about a home life free of stress and worry. After work each day, his wife greets him lovingly at the door and his well-behaved children are also glad to see him. He enters the comfort of a well-maintained home as his wife urges him to relax before taking part in dinner, the aroma of which he can already smell wafting through the air. Conversation at dinner is enjoyable and free of conflict. Later, the family goes out together for an evening stroll, and he returns to put the children to bed with no hassle or fuss. Then he and his wife relax and talk together, watch a little television, and go to bed to make love, all at a reasonable hour. And you chuckle, and his very next sentence is, some wives may chuckle as they read the above scenario, but I assure you, if there is a wide gap between the reality of your home life and this fantasy, your marriage may be in serious trouble. And so it goes back to what we talked about in week two, where we said that one of the consequences of the fall was that men got expelled from the garden, and there is this desire in the man to go back to the garden, to go back to where things are, where there's peace and quiet, and things are calm. For men, you know, and it's not this idea that a man's home is his castle. I don't even like that expression, where somehow we come in and everybody, all the servants kind of tend to us. But there is a sense of wanting to come home to a place of quiet and structure and calm. And again, that doesn't mean sitting in my easy chair with, you know, a cool beverage of choice while my wife does all the work. But it's different for everybody. Here's what we have discovered that it is for Karen and me. I want Karen to own the meal planning. And that's been true for most of our marriage. So if I come home from work and say, you know, what are we going to do for dinner tonight? And she says, I really don't know. Do you have any ideas? It's like, I just don't want to have to think about that, okay? I want her to have thought it through. Now, it doesn't mean, I want her to do all the work. In fact, these days, I'm the one that does the grocery shopping for our family, and I often will do, you know, the cooking, and I'll help clean up. I'm fine doing all that stuff. In fact, I remember sometimes calling home in the middle of the day and talking to Karen and saying, you know, what are we doing? We have plans for dinner tonight. And she says, well, I was thinking, you know, would you be willing to go to the store and pick up some salmon and some broccoli, and would you grill that when we get home? And I'm like, yeah, I'd be glad to do that. So here, she comes up with the idea, but I'm the one that goes to the grocery store. I'm the one that cooks most of it, and I help with the cleanup. You would think that this need now wouldn't be met for me, but it is. Because for me, what I want is I don't want to have to do the thinking, and I'm more than happy to plan that out. The other thing that we love cooking together, doing that kind of stuff. And so even doing things in the kitchen together, for me, meets the emotional need of domestic support, this idea that we're in the household together. And so we share responsibilities, and we talked about that. One of the things that Karen has said to me is, you know, I don't mind loading the dishwasher and unloading the dishwasher, which was really a nice way of saying, Gordy, please don't load the dishwasher, because apparently there is a correct way and a not correct way to load the dishwasher, but we won't get into that right now. But what she said to me is she really doesn't like washing the pots and pans, the big, gross, dirty stuff, okay? I don't particularly like doing those either, but I don't mind it. And the fact that I know she really doesn't like doing that, I can serve her that way. And so we divide out the responsibilities. So again, part of the need of domestic support is met not with her doing everything, but of us kind of divvying up the responsibilities and who's responsible for what. And so, as I said, I do most of the grocery shopping. She does the laundry. And so we kind of have to divide those responsibilities, and that works for us. So the number four need for men is domestic support. For women, then, the number five need is family commitment. Harley says she needs him to be a good father. I remember one time Karen said to me, we were talking, I think we were probably talking about sex and, you know, what could kind of increase our doing it more often. And she said, one of the things that attracts me to you sexually is when I see you being a good father. I went, really? She says, oh, yeah, that kind of endears me to you when I see how good of a dad you are. And I thought, huh, bring those boys in here. I'm just feeling like being a good dad right now. And, and that has to do with how we treat their family of origin as well, and how we respect the family that she came out of. So it's our current family and our families of origin. And it also has to do a lot with consistency and disciplining. And dads, this is where, we often fall very short. If there's different rules that the kids have when they're with dad than when they're with mom. And so we have decided that we need to talk about that. We need to have absolute consistency. So somehow mom isn't the bad guy, and dad, you know, kids get to get away with stuff when they do that. I remember even recently having a situation with one of our sons where, I guess it was a while back, where, you know, we needed to have a difficult conversation. There was a kind of a confrontation, some discipline that needed to happen, and we were kind of talking that through. And I just felt very strongly about it. And I just said, you know what, Karen, let me handle this. I think this is a father-son, kind of an in-your-face father-son conversation I need to have with him, okay? She felt very cared for. This emotional need was met in that, partly because she also knew that I wasn't going to take it and somehow he's going to get away with stuff and I was going to say, okay, you know, your mom's pretty pissed about this. So no, it was, you know, she knew that there was going to be a direct confrontation, but she felt cared for that I would say, let me handle this. Let me own this one. because of the need to be a father-son conversation. And then finally, the number five need for men is admiration. Admiration. Again, men and women are very, very different in this. And the thing that men need to hear, women need to hear most from their husbands is, I love you. But the thing men need to hear more than the phrase, I love you, is, I'm proud of you. We have a sense that you love us. We know that you love us. What we wonder about is, are you proud? Do you admire us? And so one of the top five needs for men in a marriage is admiration, of being admired. I remember one summer, I was getting ready to teach this for Marriage Matters and Rebuilders, and was kind of looking over my notes and looking through the book one afternoon at home in the living room. And Karen walked through the living room and said, what are you doing? And I had this book out, and so just kind of being a smart aleck, I said, oh, I'm just reading How to Better Meet Your Needs, which, by the way, left me wide open for criticism at that point. But what she said was, she stopped and she said, oh, you do most of that pretty well anyway. And I thought, really? And my next thought was, you haven't seen anything yet. See, there's often a hesitation in a woman to kind of compliment, admire her husband for fear of complacency. And the idea that, you know, if I set out to clean the garage and I only get, you know, one quarter of the garage, one kind of corner cleaned, that when she sees that, when I kind of finish for the day, that kind of a typical response for some women is to not focus on the quarter that I cleaned, but to ask the question, when are you going to get the rest done? You know, when are you going to finish? Which, you know, if I do that, and Karen, you know, says to me, the first question is about what I haven't done, and says, well, when are you going to get to the rest? That kind of shuts me down. There's a part of me that doesn't get motivated to continue working. That's not a motivating thing like some women, I think, hope that it's going to be. But in fact, if I clean one quarter of the garage and she walks out and says, oh my, does that look good. That's the cleanest that corner of the garage has ever been. Oh, thank you for doing that, Gordy. That's amazing, okay? In that moment, I feel admired. I feel admiration, and that motivates me. And my first thought is, you haven't seen anything yet. Wait till I finish the rest of the garage. And so this need for admiration for men is a motivator. And so women, I know that there is a hesitancy sometimes to do that for fear of complacency, but it won't become complacent for husbands, because admiration motivates us to even be better men and better husbands, all right? So just finally, before you go to your small groups, just a reminder, this is not about waiving your needs in front of your spouse or somebody else, about going home and going, okay, let's talk about this, because, you know, we talked about the need that I have that is not being met very well at all, okay? It's not about that. It's about you looking at their needs. It's about me as a husband saying, what are my wife's top needs, and what could I do better to meet them? Even if in four of them I'm doing really, really well, in the one that's kind of lacking, what could I specifically do to be better about meeting her? Because Harley's contention is, even if one of these needs is not being met, your marriage is in danger. Take the conversation need, you know, that women have. Imagine a couple where even if the other needs are being met pretty well, but they've really kind of lost the art of conversation. They never just sit and talk. But now she's at work, and she's, you know, working alongside of a partner, a man, part of her team, and there's no, you know, bad intentions at all. She doesn't think, I'm going to, you know, try and strike up a relationship with this guy. It's just a typical working relationship. But, you know, once in a while when they have a break or they bring food in and have lunch, that he'll just ask her questions, tell me about your family, and they just begin having these conversations. And without realizing it, that's meeting an emotional need for her, an emotional need that is not being met at home. And so over time, she loves those conversations, and she looks forward to the conversations. And without even being aware that this is what's going on, eventually she begins to have feelings for the guy and wonders if she's falling in love. And there's nothing in her brain that connects the dots and says, I'll bet this is because we have conversation over lunch about our families. She begins to maybe even wonder, maybe God is really wants me with him. And so the beginning of an affair is often one of these needs being met outside the home that's not being met in the marriage. And that's why they're all really, really critical. And I had a woman one time after a session of Marriage Matters came up and said, but I think we're fine. I'm doing four of them really, really well. The one that we're not doing, I'm not doing very well, but I think that's okay. And I think you missed the whole point. These top five needs are so critical in each one of our souls that if even one is not being met in the marriage is in danger. And a reminder, that doesn't mean it's okay to go looking for it to be met outside the marriage, because we gave the other person exclusive rights to meet these needs. But it means we need to be diligent and very, very intentional. Now, if, as we talk about this, there is a glaring need that you have that you feel like isn't being met, well, then you need to approach that with your spouse in a tactful, understanding way, that in the communication way that we talked about before, that really is helping them. Maybe they just don't even understand that or know that about you. And how do you lovingly, gracefully talk about that?